Welcome to the Academy Football Network podcast. This week we are joined by Sean Fitzpatrick, Millwall Lioness defender and head of Post 16 Girls at Sutton United. Part 1, we discuss the sacrifices made to become a full-time coach using a youth worker's lens in coaching and the differences between coaching boys and girls. Don't forget to like, share and subscribe. My mum's Jamaican, yeah. Not you, yeah, that's weird, isn't it? Not used to that.
All right. Talk to me. Down. Yeah. All right, cool. I gotta get comfy.
Oh my God.
What's going on, D? Okay, we go again. Academy Football Network podcast. Today, I want to say interesting this week because, honestly speaking, heard some of the things out there that this young lady was saying, and I thought, well, myself and the team, we thought, let's get her on. So thank you, Sean Fitzpatrick.
Thank you.
Welcome to the show. I want to say it's a variety in regards to your journey. Someone with some huge aspirations, and it's good to see coming from, I have to say, a female in a male dominant environment. Must be tough. But luckily for me, I've experienced loads of good coaches in terms of the female and the good work that's going on there. So we thought we want to share that. We're talking loads of girls' programs that you've been involved with. We're talking men's football that you've been involved in. We're talking under-18s boys. We're talking a sports background, but still wants to do loads more. So it's nice to hear from you.
Thank you.
That's okay. I want to talk about first what it must be like for someone to kind of transition from sort of that 9-to-5 world that we've all been involved with to a transition into a sporting environment where we've all been there. You have to kind of start with a few hours here, a few hours there, and then build it up. So what was that like for you?
It was hard. It's hard. It's not an easy transition at all. And there's a bit of a trade-off there. So it's like you're basically compromising loads of money, loads of work for happiness, basically, because it's what you want to do. Yeah. So that feeling of going for a 9-to-5 and you get to 12 o'clock and you're like, oh, when's my lunch break?
Yeah.
You come back from the lunch break, try to take a lunch break as late as you can, so you've only got 2 hours left on shift. Do you know what I mean? You know all them things that you do to try and get through your 9-to-5.
Yeah.
You don't have that in the sporting world.
Yeah,
so when
yeah.
you come over now, you're not counting hours. It's like, oh, what, we're done already.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Then you've got to go somewhere else. And like you said, it's a few hours here, a few hours there. So you're dotting around. So your days become longer sometimes, but you're not even counting the time, like how you're counting it in your 9-to-5. But financially, it takes way longer for it to pay off. Way longer. Do you know what I mean? 100%. You know, in a 9-to-5, you sit down with your manager and have a 1-to-1 about the year, and then they'll give you a little $2,000 pay rise, keep you quiet for another year. Do you know what I mean? You do it again, basically. Do you know what I mean? Whereas in the footballing world, you start off on nothing.
Yeah.
You have to start off doing unpaid work, firstly. That's the beginning. I don't know how long you're going to be doing that for.
Yeah.
That could all be a year, 2 years, do you know what I mean? And then you might get a little 4 hours here, a little 3 hours there, but then it might be, you know, you've got to make up all of those hours. Now you're doing 3-4 jobs, do you know what I mean? Until such time you get given something full-time, and that takes a long time, so...
It's interesting, and although it's hard, it's nice to hear that, because people that think about it, they always think about the glamour side of it. Do you know what I mean? All this money and football and all this sort of fame and glory. Mm. But for anyone that I know, they probably went through a similar journey as
that. Yeah, it takes years to get there, yeah.
Volunteering and just getting your foot in the door and going and sort of watching coaches and going and doing that. And it seems like, obviously, a similar journey for you. There's no difference in terms of what you need to do.
And you have to be willing to give up some stuff as well at some point. You have to be willing. I was like living on my own, nice flat, driving a nice car.
Yeah,
and that.
Sacrifice.
You saw me pull up in my smart car today.
There's nothing wrong with a smart car.
Do you know what I mean?
I'm like, my next car, mate.
It's quick, easy, £20 a year on tax.
Listen, you have to do what you have to do. And I think
it's great, but you have to give up some stuff.
I think there's always a journey. We always talk about the journey that you do as a coach, but there's also sort of an appreciation when you do get that full-time piece of work, or when you're starting off and someone says, you know what, can you be full-time in the environment? And it's almost like, full-time in football? Hell yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no brainer. Yeah, let's go.
Hell yeah, because... And also that hardship that you have to go through to go there, there's just an appreciation for it. So,
yeah, there is, yeah.
So what was you doing before? What was you doing before the football world?
So I don't know how far you want to go back here, but I mean, apart from, you know, you go to...
Just give us some throw out.
I'll just throw some stuff. So I did my A-levels completely unrelated to sport because I had no... Yeah, my A-levels are in like law and politics. Wow. They're like completely unrelated. Left college, and then just retail jobs that you do, innit? Like, I used to work in phone shops and it's nonsense, basically. Wow. Just like little 15-hour contracts here and there.
Yeah.
And then I'm sure everyone's been there when you get to that stage in retail where you need to go and pick up an elite retail job. So it's like, you don't want to do clothes anymore. You don't want to do anymore. You want to be in a phone shop. You want to be in like JD. Do you know what I mean?
I always wanted to be in JD's.
You always wanted to be in JD.
For anyone who's young, JD's is like the one. If you work in JD, I never ever got there, but if you ever work in JD, you're like, I'm the pinnacle of retail.
I'm at the top of the retail world. So I got to that point. I was working in a phone shop and I was thinking, right, what now? So I just took a whim and just applied for the bank, basically, as like cashier. Anyway, got the job, and then the thing about the banking world is it's so easy to just get caught because you get promotion and the money's there, and you know what I mean, and then they give you a little company car and everything gets nice. So I did 5 years in the bank, but I did a lot of jobs in that one role. Started off as a cashier, did some back office stuff, did a bit of payments and cash management with like investments and insurance companies. Wow. And then I went and did anti money laundering for a year.
You laundered what for like Ozark? Like,
no, this is small boy stuff. That was like if you come in and walk into the branch. I wasn't in the branch, I was in Canary Wharf, but if you're a customer, you walk into the branch and you want a bank account, but you've got some kind of link to like a high risk country, whether it be assets there, money there, just a nationality, that alone can flag up.
Oh, wow.
And then that account will land on my desk. And it's down to me to approve or decline it, or send it back to the branch and say, we need more information from that customer.
Wow.
And then come back. So I was doing that.
So money laundering is a real thing.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, this is not for the program.
I thought it was just Ozark or TV.
No, 100%. I used to get customers like, just things like, they'll tell you that they've got £1 million in assets in, I don't know, Malawi or something. Yeah. They've got £1 million assets there, but they've only earned 300k salary for the last 2 years.
So how they?
Before that, you was earning like 50k. So how on earth have you managed to accumulate £1 million sterling as well? Not your local currency. Do you know what I mean? £1 million over here. Wow. Then you're obviously going to start asking questions like, how did you make this money? So if you're bringing money over and it's deemed to be dirty money, obviously the bank will say no. We don't want your account.
You're trying to clean it through us.
Yeah, exactly. So
wow, I'm learning.
Yeah, so that's what I was doing. So anyway, I finished off as a sales and service manager, in the branch, basically. It's like a branch manager.
And you gave that all up for the love of football?
Well, not initially. I gave up. Sorry to cut you, by the way.
No. I thought it was the love of football. Now he's going somewhere else.
Sorry. And then, anyway, I left there. I was just unhappy. I'd done 5 years there. All these jobs I just named to you. It's like, what now, basically? What was that? My next challenge? So I decided to go and be a floor manager at Adidas.
Oh, wow.
So I was running the women's floor, basically, just with the sportswear, which was like my little way of getting into something that I wanted to do, but I'm still at the pinnacle of retail. I'm still in the retail world. and then that's when the coaching stuff came in. But that was hard because I was working a 40-hour week at Adidas, and you know how it goes. 40 hours is not traveling time.
Yeah.
And I'm a manager, so people are definitely calling me sick at 6 o'clock in the morning on my day off. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Stuff like that is going on. But I was doing like 2 to 11 shifts at Adidas and coaching at a school from like 7:30 in the morning till like 9:30, 10 o'clock, unpaid.
Just to get the experience.
Yeah, because them times I didn't even have a level one.
Yeah.
So that one was just like a bring-in for a friend. Like a friend that I'd have known for years, knows that obviously I've always played football. So, Sean, why don't you come and coach some of the players down here?
Mm.
So that's just what I did. And it was all charity work, unpaid. And I did that for time, like for a good I did that for about a year, wow. I think. And I'm, like I'm saying, I was knackered. Yeah. It was tiring.
That's
but
like a 14-hour, 16-hour day.
This is what I'm trying to say. Yeah. So it was hard. But that company have definitely, like, given back for my unpaid time. Do you know what I mean? Like, now I'm a youth worker there. I still do coaching there. Now my work is paid well as well. Mm. So they've really like paid me back for my unpaid time. Nice. But if I didn't do all of that,
then you would never be
Never be here. Yeah, because
never get the opportunity.
Exactly, never get an opportunity. So at some point you're gonna have to like swallow your pride, basically.
How do you use your youth work background now into terms of your coaching with young people? How do you transfer those skills?
Okay, so for example, I haven't done it with the girls yet. I should though, but I've definitely done it with the boys. I'll throw random scenarios during a coaching session. So we could be playing a game at the end and I'll make a poor decision and give away a penalty. Yeah. Because it can happen, so you better learn how to deal with it. So that's what I'll do. Oh, Sean, that's not a pen. Refs called it. So for me, that's me teaching these boys how to channel their emotions when they're angry. So when you come to me and you're shouting at me, if I'm a ref, you know, all I'm going to do is card you and you're going to go to the side and you're going to be vexed and you're going to wish you didn't open your mouth for no reason. Do you know what I mean? That will teach you as a young youth how to manage your emotions when you're angry, because that stops you from doing wild stuff as a young boy, especially as a young black boy. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So those are the kind of things I'll throw in sometimes just to throw a curveball to see how you manage in when you're under pressure. Yeah. So I don't think you can't teach that in schools.
No,
so.
I think that's a great example, and it's something that you don't learn through the manual book.
No,
do you know what I mean?
Don't teach you don't courses.
You don't get it on you don't get it on a level two,
no,
and some of those skills that you get from working in youth work or your experiences in life, really, it's just you get those kind of skills that you go, do you know what, I know what these kids are about, I understand kids in a different sort of way, and I can bring that to my coaching as well, which I think is great and interesting. And how do we get those skills to other people who don't get to experience, you know what I mean, working in youth?
Yeah, it's difficult because it can't, that stuff, I never went on a course and learned that. Was just, maybe it's a bit of my background. I grew up in Croydon. So like you're around a lot of high pressured scenarios all the time. As a young, like you can see some stuff from young. Do you know what I mean? Younger than what you ever should. So there's a lot of the stuff that those boys come to football to forget about.
Yeah.
And come to football and try to channel it, basically. So this is a safe space for them. So it's probably the best space for them to learn. Just about transferable skills and learning about just the stuff that you can learn. You can teach yourself temperament in football. Do you know what I mean? And you can now go and use that. If I say to a boy, like, the same way how you managed to stop yourself from running your mouth to the referee, why don't you try that at home with your mum? Do you know what I mean? Or why don't you try that with your teacher?
Just hold, you know what I mean?
Just pick your battles.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about it all the time, don't we? We talk about it all the time, those kind of experiences you get from not being in football. And people will say, well, in football environment, it should just be just about the football. But the modern kid now, they come with so many different things, so many different variables that you have to consider. Have to consider it.
I think it helps if you're coaching within your area as well, like within your community.
Yeah.
Because I might not be able to relate to little Jimmy from Erith.
Do you know what I mean?
I might, because I didn't grow up like you did.
Yeah,
so I can probably relate to a boy that's in and around South London or London in general, because you still get the same issues everywhere.
But does that pigeonhole you, though?
It can
Because I think sometimes people also suffer from that as well. Because,
yeah, they don't want to get out.
Well, not even that. It's just like if there is a great opportunity in Erith, or
you'd say no. Yeah,
or you might even say no, or somebody might go, or the boss of Erith, or I don't know. I was saying Erith, but a different. Mm-hmm. Community, let's say.
You might go Cardiff, for example.
Cardiff.
They've got an academy manager job and they think Sean might be the great person, but.
Exactly.
She's not from around the area.
She's not from around the area.
Yeah, that's true.
I think also you got to be careful with that, because you don't want to. I'm a big believer in we've got to, one, use our experiences, but also diversify ourselves
to allow ourselves for anything. There's pros and cons.
There's trade-offs to it. But yeah, definitely, I think it's a great experience that you've got to hopefully use
later down or keep using, because you have been using to keep using. So yeah,
hopefully.
to keep using.
So you moved off the Adidas shop floor.
Yeah.
And then you progressed into...
That was Pick Up Academy. So while I was at Adidas, I was coaching for Reaching Higher part-time. And then a friend called me while I was walking past East Croydon Station and just said, like, what are you doing? I just saw you, whatever, whatever. I'm still working at Adidas. He said that he was out, like, for lunch, basically, with a girl, and that girl's brother was looking to start a girls program, and they're looking for a coach. So I was like, oh, okay. So if I didn't see him that day, that phone call would have never come. So I said, yeah, okay, like, put us in touch. So his name's George. He runs Pick Up Academy. And we just found out that we had a few like mutual links basically anyway. So I went down for an interview. Well, it was like an informal interview. It's more like a chat basically, just to like...
Which it normally is in football.
Yeah. So we just kind of spoke about what he wanted to do, whether I was the right person to do it. The only thing he couldn't offer me was anywhere near the salary I was on. Yeah. So it was like half and some.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was like, I'm, and like I said, I'm living on my own. Yeah. So I'm thinking, I've got £900 rent to pay.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? So am I willing to give it up? But I did.
Yeah.
So, and to be fair, I knew, and bearing in mind that I didn't have my level one.
Yeah.
So when he's brought me on, he's taken a risk. I'm running a whole program that's brand new, unqualified, but the trade-off to me cutting the salary was that he paid for my level one and my level two.
Wow.
So it was like, okay, he's willing to invest in me. He's investing in me, so I'll happily take the pay cut, basically. So that's what he did, and I had to appreciate the risk that he took. And if he didn't take that risk on me, none of this journey would have happened, really and truly. Reach and Higher were also willing to do the same thing, but the roles were different because he gave me a senior role immediately and unqualified.
Yeah.
So,
but he developed it started you, from there. He invested in you.
Yeah, yeah.
Level one, level two.
I went and did my level one that December.
Yeah.
And ran that program for 2 years.
Wow.
And then my level two, I've still got to finish block three, but obviously because of COVID, it's just push back.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm more than halfway now, so that should be done soon, hopefully. but yeah, that's how.
So what was that like in terms of? I mean, also, there's probably you talked about transferable skills. You probably got some of your manager, senior position in a bank. So you have that kind of leadership.
Yeah, by
quality.
That time I'd found my yeah.
Yeah, so you're confident enough to lead and delegate and coordinate and those sorts of things. That was
good. Those 2 years was a fantastic experience because I was obviously heading up the girls. So yeah, those leadership qualities that I'd now found in my job roles.
Yeah.
So the leadership stuff was fine. The managerial stuff was fine. Delegating, all that kind of stuff, I was okay with. Even admin stuff, I was fine with it.
Yeah.
But obviously, it was a challenge. This was my first team. These players are mine.
Yeah.
So the way they play reflect me.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? So when they're losing, I'm taking it mad personal. because this is a reflection of me.
Yeah.
So, and even then, I learned not to do that.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? So it's like, that was a massive learning curve for me. And I'd never coached a girls' team prior to that. All of those unpaid hours was boys' teams.
Yeah.
So I'd learnt the ropes through boys and I learnt from some fantastic coaches. So it was transferring those into girls.
Yeah. Is it different? People say,
yeah.
Is it different?
Yeah, it's not different. I think the common misconception is that it's different due to technical ability, but it's not.
Yeah.
So you can get poor boys the same way you can get poor girls. You can get really good girls and you can get really good boys.
Yeah,
so it's not about technical ability. Yeah. It's the needs of females are different to the needs of men.
Yeah, okay.
That's all it is.
Go on, talk to me. talk to me.
Like I found with boys, they're really heavily football related. So they actually don't want to talk to you about anything else basically except for football. So when they're having an off day, it's actually hard to get out of them why they're having that off day.
Yeah.
So a lot of coaches will just put it down to like you're poor, you're not good basically because you're not consistent. That's what you'll get called. You get called that you're not consistent. Whereas actually maybe he had to take his four younger siblings to school that day, come back, pick them up, then make dinner for three of them.
Yeah.
Mum's been shouting at him for the last 3 days and now he's coming to football vex.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It could be that, but a boy will never tell you. okay. basically, because men just don't like to talk. So you have to really like read into players, and not only that, but you basically have to take their football on surface value. You can't, because they're never going to tell you basically what's going on. If you really manage to make a difference, then they will. But girls now will come to football crying. Do you know what I mean? So they will tell you, like, they will, Sean, this is what's going on, and da 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 da.
Absorb that.
You've got to absorb all of that, and help them. Girls bring it on the pitch.
Yeah, okay.
And even the togetherness is also harder to bring together. Boys are really together.
They get together
really quickly. I feel like boys, maybe from young, I don't know whether, I think boys might find it easier to make friends than girls do. I don't know, but maybe there's a science behind it. I don't know. But boys, I've always found that boys come together quicker than girls do. Girls like to make little comments that this, they like to do all the little bitchy stuff, basically. And it's really difficult to bring them together.
Wonder what that's about.
It's just girls. Yeah. It's just how girls are. It's just women. We just like to just chat and gossip. That's just what we do.
So, I love a good gossip.
Don't get me wrong. Boys can do it. But the thing is about boys, you would know, you probably like fight your brother on Monday at 3 o'clock. And then by 4 o'clock, you're spudding each other playing FIFA.
To be honest, my good friends, the people I keep close, to be honest, I could have a fallout in the morning with them. And to be honest, by the evening,
this is it. Yeah.
We're talking again. Or,
girls are holding that grudge for time. I've had girls tell me that they're not passing to each other because they're annoyed about something that someone said on Snapchat yesterday. I think you can't be serious. You would never get that in boys football. That stuff just doesn't happen. So but like I'm saying, there's a trade-off to girls, because boys can sometimes be ignorant when they're ready, like they feel like they can't be taught anything because they've watched so much football now that they just know everything basically. Girls are like sponges. So they're like, please tell me how to open my body and receive on a half turn. Please tell me how to do this. And they're like, they literally worship everything that you say, practically. Yeah. Boys are a little bit more, they might question you a bit, or they might test you a bit, or they don't necessarily buy into you straight away. And that's just not even me as a female. That's just coaching boys.
I've had experience of working in female environment and a male environment as well. So I'm looking at that. I'm listening to what you're saying, and I'm actually going, okay, yeah, that's what that meant. I understand now. I probably took it at face value when you're working consistently in the environment, but.
And because of the way that girls' football is portrayed, it's portrayed as something that you want to do for fun. So that's how it's advertised. Without people realising it, it's advertised as something that looks fun, basically.
It's a hobby.
Yeah, that's how it's advertised to the world, because they just right now are just encouraging people to play, even if it is for fun. So most of the time, you could walk into a boys' team, 90%, if you was to walk into a boys' team and say, oh, boys, how many of you want to make it as footballers? Most of them will say yes. Whereas girls, you'll get quite a mixed. 4 or 5 of them will say, oh, I'm just here
just
for fitness,
hobby.
For fun. Some of them will say, no, I want to go on. Some of them will say, I don't know if I'm good enough.
Success.
So that's why they come together so quickly, because they've got one common goal. Whereas girls, it's difficult to find a full squad that's got that common goal. And I think when they do, they go on to do well.
So that's quite interesting. I'm gonna look into that. You know, I'm gonna look into that, because I think that's quite interesting. And if you understand that, there might be other coaches who've experienced both environments as well, and can kind of see similarities.
I mean, that's just my personal
experience.
Your perception exactly.
And where you've kind of experienced it, which is interesting as well. And I would like to hear more of that, to be honest, in understanding the differences and similarities of the areas, and thinking of people go, well, actually, these are the reasons why. And linking to, for females, for a long time, it wasn't seen to be a profession, let's say. Whereas for the boys' environment, 100%, it's a way to have a lifetime of success.
This is it.
It's changing. And hopefully there's WSL.
Well, the thing is that, the truth is that in regards to the history, women's football was bigger before. So, and that was something that the FA made a decision that women were no longer allowed to play in stadiums to encourage men to play football.
Wow.
So when people say stuff like, oh, things need to change, I think to myself, no, things need to go back. It was the FA that took this away in the first place. Now the FA are pushing something that they took away. Do you know what I mean? This is why they're having to unwrite all of this history that they actually made.
I mean, so without knowing the reason why it changed, and it might have been, I don't know.
I think it, well, from what like I've researched, it's just because they wanted to encourage more men to play football at the time, because women, I don't know, it was a long time ago, so it's probably quite backwards thinking, do you know what I mean? So it's like, okay, let's encourage men to play, so stop women from playing. Instead of them doing both, they just decided to just, no, women can't play because we're going to put men in those stadiums.
I mean, we was talking about it off camera. I think sort of you know more about girls' football now. People that we was listening just before, people kind of go to girls' football, especially if your team's not doing your so-called...
Your team's not doing well.
You might revert to, because I know I reverted to watching. I'm avidly interested in women's football. Yeah. I watch it. I know players. I know I've been involved in it. So I do have that kind of attraction to it.
But what did you think was the differences?
I was quite young. I was quite young when I got involved in women's football, and it's interesting. I'm asking the question. But I do agree in regards to, it was a great learning experience for me, because I was linked to what you said about girls want to absorb the information. Mm-hmm. I was able to develop my coaching that way because, the girls wanted to
learn.
It was all about the learning experience. Mm-hmm, I was able to be a coach that was, I can give information. They're going to listen to everything I can say. I can take time. I don't have to feel pressure. Because you know when I did coaching badges, you're doing a badge and you're feeling like it's like you're in a pressured environment. And that almost feels like when you're actually, when you want to do well, it can feel like that. So, definitely. Whereas in the boys' environment, when I first went into the boys' environment, similar to what you was talking about as well, which is interesting, is that if you're not good enough, you kind of feel like the boys will tell you.
Yeah.
It will always be like they're ready to challenge you on what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So, whereas in the girls' environments, they're absorbing, they're taking on information. Don't get me wrong. There's some in each of others in terms of there might be a few girls who want to challenge, and there might be a few boys who are ready to absorb. But in a general perspective, in terms of my own experiences, that's kind of what happened as well. So it's really interesting in the whys. Why is it like that for girls, and why is it like that for in the boys' environment? Who knows?
It's interesting. Maybe there is similarities in my journey.
Part 2 out soon. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.